League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, Packer fans. Welcome to the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, live and in person in Lambeau Field, inside the bowels of Lambeau Field, joined by my colleagues at PackersNews.com, Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein. You guys have had a chance to check out practice here for the last couple weeks. First of all, it's great to see your faces without the whole like StreamYard setup in between. That's kind of nice.
J.R., you walk past me. You don't even tell me you're coming. And I'm just like standing on the sideline before practice, just waiting for the team. They're inside the Hudson Center, waiting for them to come out. And you walk past, I'm like, I know him. Yep, I work with him.
It's true.
That's how I knew you were coming today. So yes. Good to see you.
Hey, yes, good to see you guys as well. I got to watch some practice. I want to talk some kicking again. I want to talk just in general what we've seen the first 2 weeks. Family night is coming up this weekend. Tom, I'll start with you. I think the question I have is sort of who the stars have been. That's probably overstating it of practice thus far. Maybe the surprises. I'll tell you the name that comes to mind for me is Rashid Walker, because I don't know if we knew he was for sure the left tackle going into camp, and now I feel like maybe that's where we are. But I kind of just opened the floor, and I'll have you guys both answer that. Who are the people that have really stood out that you have really caught your eye this camp?
Well, the one thing about training camp practice is that it's much harder to see and judge offensive line play and defensive line play because, you know, they're not allowed to sack the quarterback, they're not allowed to cut block, they're not allowed to do a lot of things. So you kind of have to just do your best to evaluate. It's really the skill players and the defense, you know, the back end of the defense that you can probably tell the most. I would say the thing that's I've noticed the most is either probably the play of the wide receivers. It's been very veteran-like as opposed to last year when you just didn't know what they were going to run or what kind of connection they'd have with Love. And you can see Love has a great connection with Dontavian Wicks. You know, he scored the winning touchdown and the two-point conversion in 2 minutes the other day. And then almost got in the end zone, had a spectacular deep catch. And Romeo Doubs has been really good. He's been all over the place. He's been battling Jair Alexander in one-on-ones and pretty much smoked him at least a half dozen times. So that's kind of what stands out to me.
You know, to carry that train of thought, Christian Watson's already got two deep balls on go balls. Jaden Reed, we know what he's about. I mean, he showed last year as a rookie. He's their top four. It's really solid. And we know they even go deeper than that. But with that said, I think what stood out to me is the other side of that equation, the back end of the defense, which has gotten its hand on a lot of footballs and has made a lot of interceptions to start camp. A lot of that had to do maybe a little bit with Jordan Love's hold-in, not practicing. When you're going against a backup quarterback, you're going to have more opportunities. But this is a defense that did not have near enough interceptions last year. It's a defensive coordinator that comes from a DB track. And even with Jordan Love back at practice, they're still getting interceptions. They're picking off the football in a way that I don't think they did a year ago this time. So I think that, you know, as good as the receivers have been, and Jordan Love looks like Jordan Love. It's entirely different than a year ago. There's no shroud of mystery over who this guy is going to be. He's the highest paid player in NFL history. He's going to be good. But the defensive backs have played better. I think that they've got some young talent now at safety with the rookies. And along your train of thought with Rashid Walker kind of solidifying himself early, it sure looks like Eric Stokes is on the same thing. You know, and that's not Carrington Valentine. He's out with a hamstring these past 2 days. He's played well. I mean, he's made plays. It's not a fault of Carrington Valentine. It's just Eric Stoops been getting the reps. He's been making plays, and they've got some depth there. And but it looks like he's the front runner right now, much in the way that Rashid Walker is at left tackle, to be the starting corner opposite of Jair Alexander.
Yeah, Eric Stokes is definitely a name that I had in my head as somebody that I was surprised was kind of solidifying, running away with that particular job. The flip side, of course, to this question is the guys that maybe haven't been as impressive as you thought. And, you know, we're talking about 2 weeks of standing, some often not in pads. So I know that we're not really at a point where we're writing anybody off. I don't know if you guys have a name or two, or maybe even just a position group or two that you would be a little concerned about. Tom, is there anything that jumps for you right away?
Just to backtrack, I would say Jordan Morgan's another one of those guys who is worth noting because, you know, I can't tell you that he's playing, you know, he's blocking perfectly or he's great in the run game or, you know, but he got slapped into a sharing role at right guard with Sean Ryan, and now it's all his. So he must be doing something right, something that they like, or they see a ton of potential in him. So I just wanted to add his name to the mix.
What do you think of his one-on-ones? Because I think he looks the part one-on-one.
Yeah, he's very athletic, and he in space, he's a tough guy to beat. You know, what's going to be the real challenge for him is the, you know, hand-to-hand and guys, you know, who can bull rush him a little bit, use their strength. But, yeah, when he can get out in some open space, he's really athletic. You know, the number one person who's kind of been disappointing, I think, is Anders Carlson. You know, he's starting to miss some kicks. I don't think his kicks have been anywhere near as powerful as Greg Joseph's. Greg Joseph has easily taken the lead in that race. And, you know, Carlson will get a big, you know, he will get a benefit from being a draft pick. There's no question. You know, if it's even close to even, they'll go with the draft pick. But Joseph has looked really good, and his kickoffs are pretty good too. I would say Sean Clifford has been a disappointment. Mm-hmm. I expected him to come out and really take advantage of being the number one quarterback while Love was out, and he just threw like six interceptions, you know, so he hasn't been great. You know, I haven't seen a lot from Luke Musgrave. I don't want to say he's a disappointment because, you know, he's still someone they're going to use a lot, but I just haven't seen him in the offense. Just don't see him making big plays down the middle of the field. Now, maybe that has to do with Halfley's defense, but that's another guy that, you know, they're going to be looking for to make some plays.
You took two of my guys. The two guys in my head were Anders Carlson and Sean Clifford. I think Sean Clifford is absolutely and here's what's interesting. He showed potential last year in preseason. When he got in the game in Minnesota, he made some plays. Like, we know that there's some potential, there's some talent there. But I think that there's a very legitimate number two battle job, competition for the job between him and Michael Pratt. And that's going to really get into high gear when they get into the preseason. As far as Anders Carlson, I think I said it last time, like, someone's going to blink here. They're both kicking really well. Well, this practice today, Thursday, 2 days before family night, Anders Carlson blinked. This was the first time that we saw one of them kind of have a stumble, a significant stumble. He was 3 of 6 today. All three of his misses, importantly, pulled to the left. And Anders Carlson said last year that was his issue. And I feel like if this is a year ago in camp and he has a day where he misses all three to the left, that's not the worst thing because you can fix that, right? Like, you know what the issue is. It's a consistent issue. Go out and fix it. But at what point is a consistent issue just a permanent issue? Because if it's continuing to be a problem, him missing kicks to the left, it's been a year. And he's 24 of 30 in camp. on its own, that's 80%. It's okay. It's not good, but it's not terrible either. It's not like he's kicking miserable in camp. If he had a respectable rookie year, he had no, let's say hypothetically, he had no competition in camp right now. He's just 24 of 30. Like, okay, it's a bad day. He'll be fine. He showed something last year. He'll be fine. But he didn't have a respectable rookie season. He had a terrible rookie season. And he has competition in camp. And that competition, Greg Joseph, is now 28 of 30 on kicks. I don't know what defines close and whatnot. And I totally agree with you, Spoon. If this is close, it's the draft pick. I don't know what's close and what's not close, but 28 and 30 and 24 of 30 are not the same. So I think family night's going to be a big, big moment in this kicking competition. The preseason games, obviously, as well. But Greg Joseph has a lead right now.
Yeah, just subjectively, you look at it, and his kicks are better off the
That's exactly
hold.
How I see it, too. Yeah.
You know, powerful, high over the net or high into the net. He almost never just hits the net straight on. He's got really he out-kicks the net in most instances, and it just looks like the ball comes up faster and harder. Now, the one thing about 80% is, you know, decent, but in a training camp when, you know, the environment's the same every day and you're not kicking in swirling winds in a stadium, then I think you got to be better than 80%. You know, I think you got to be closer to 90 because there's no rush. There's no, you know, you're not fighting a the different stadiums' elements.
And before today, he was, what, 21 of 24. So today was a significant day today. But in terms of the power, the leg power, I've wondered, and I haven't asked him, and this is something that it'd be worth asking. I wonder if he's taken just a touch off the power than a year ago, to try to be more sure of where the thing's going because of all the accuracy issues that he had. Because I remember a year ago, he was kicking these booming kicks. I mean, he was crushing the football in a way that we're not seeing now. And again, when he's 21 of 24 going into the day, I kind of get it because he doesn't need to kill. He can easily hit it. He hit a 58-yarder today. He has the leg to hit a 58-yarder. Anders Carlson does not lack for leg strength, but I don't know if you've thought this too, Spoon, but I've wondered if maybe he's just taking a touch off to make sure he knows where the dang thing's going.
Yeah, it could be, you know, like you wrote, he's got a little bit of a different approach to the ball, which may affect how it's coming off his foot. I don't know. I think the biggest question is going to be, is Joseph the guy who last year missed a bunch of kicks between 40 and 49, was really good inside 40, was pretty decent 50-plus, but, you know, the Vikings weren't falling all over themselves to sign him. And, you know, that was in – a lot of those kicks were indoors. So the Packers have to make – you know, have to take that past into consideration. But if it continues on like this, then I don't know how they stick with Carlson.
Yeah. This is an opportunity. We mentioned Jeff Hafley a couple times, and the interceptions is kind of something we haven't seen before from the defense in camp. This is a chance to see him and his, you know, the new coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball in general work with the players. Rashawn Gary talked after Thursday's practice, just the freedom. He said that before, just the freedom he has to just be himself and go after the guys. He had a very good start to camp. Are there other, you know, sort of markers that show that this is a different defense than what we've seen before? And are there any takeaways from just watching the players interact with the coaches that, you know, something that just jumps out that maybe you haven't seen before?
Well, the takeaways is probably you didn't mean it, you know, but it is the difference in their defense is they got like 14 interceptions through camp. I'll bet they had like 3 interceptions during camp last year. They're far more aggressive to the ball. Now that could lead to some big plays. They're fairly vanilla defense. You know, they don't do a ton of stuff. You know, they're going to probably be in two high or single high, you know, zone, cover 3. But man, they let their guys fly, and you've seen people all over the ball. You know, McKinney's got a couple interceptions. Evan Williams has three interceptions. Bullard has an interception. Anthony Johnson has two interceptions. So safety play appears to be in better shape.
And interceptions are almost always a byproduct of the pressure up front.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
When the quarterback has less time, he has to rush it, he has to hurry, he doesn't throw the ball where he wants to throw it. And I think, to me, the biggest difference, you know, when we talk about this new defensive scheme, 4-3, the first thing you think of is the three, right? Okay, base defense, there's three inside linebackers off the ball instead of two like there was before. Then you think this defensive coordinator comes from a DB track, so that's obviously going to affect the secondary. To me, the biggest difference is the 4-3 principles up front, the defensive line. Having four guys, hands on the ground, three-point stance, and their attack philosophy, it's so different than the 3-4. I was talking with Kenny Clark about the difference between the 3-4 of yesteryear and the 4-3 now. And he said something I hadn't even thought. He said, you know, it basically, our formationally, we were a 4-2-5, right? We were a nickel defense just like every other team. So we were a lot closer to a 4-3 formationally than a 3-4, but we were playing that 4-3 with 3-4 principles, which is essentially build a wall. You know, it's not like you don't want to get into the backfield, but it's you want to hold up blockers, let the guys behind you make plays, flow and make plays. The benefit of the 3-4 is that you can be a lot more creative with where you're bringing the blitz from. You can bring the blitz from all over in the 3-4. What's weird is that the Packers defense didn't really blitz much from the 3-4. So that kind of negated the benefit of the 3-4. The 4-3 is designed, it's like a track sprinter getting off the line at the start gun every snap. Run, 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 get into the backfield. Rashawn Gary being a 3-point stance is something to see. That's the mentality now with this 4-3. Now they're playing 4-3 with 4-3 principles. I think there's a lot of excitement up front. There's a lot of talent up front. This Packers defensive line was the unquestioned strength of the defense last year. They actually had a good year in 2023. It was everyone else that had struggled, especially in the back end. I think this talent with this scheme, that has a lot to do with the interceptions. And I think that, you know, they're very high on the kind of pass rush they can have.
You wrote, Ryan, one of the stories that has intrigued me, and that's Kingsley Enagbare being here, being effective, looking great. This is a guy who we all thought tore his ACL, and I think did tear his ACL in the playoff game against Dallas last year. So if in a normal human being timeline, he would definitely not be here playing. He may not be here at all this season. So what in the world is going on there? Because he's medically cleared, so he's obviously healthy and looking great. But I know you got to talk to him a little bit. It's still kind of confusing, though. What exactly is ailing him or was ailing him?
I was telling Spoon, like, I still don't know that I fully understand what the heck is going on here. Let's be very clear. And Kingsley Enagbare was very clear. He tore his ACL. It was a partial tear, not a full tear, but he partially tore his ACL. Okay. So it's not like he didn't tear his ACL. He partially tore his ACL. And I don't know that he fully understood. He's point blank. He said, I don't understand all the science to it. But he was medically cleared without surgery. And even when the doctors told him that, Kingsley Enagbare said, like, there were some nerves. Like, really? Because, like, if you know anything about football, you know that a torn ACL means knee surgery and you're out a year. Like, that's just automatic. It is absolutely automatic. That's what happens. Spoon, have you ever seen you've covered the league a lot longer than me. Have you ever seen an ACL tear that didn't result in surgery?
I can't think of one. I remember Garrison Hurst played without an ACL. Yeah. Like he didn't have one or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah. But no, I can't remember an ACL that wasn't repaired.
Yeah, I know I haven't seen it. So Kingsley Enagbare says that the doctors have cleared him medically. He's no more at risk of needing knee surgery than anyone else. He can play on it. He does require daily maintenance. His hamstring, his quad, his calf, every day he has to build the muscles there to be able to support the knee. Because, again, there is a torn ligament in that knee. It's just something that he can play on. And so if you don't need the knee surgery and kill a year of your career, sure, why not go that route? You know, that's kind of where and he feels that there's no guarantee it's going to hold up, but he feels he's doing everything he can for that. He had on Wednesday, he had a sack. He had a PBU on Jordan Love. He is a really important player to this defense. He is – the type of player that fills out the depth of a roster at a premium position. He's not a star. He's not going to, you know, he's had 5 sacks in 2 years. But having that type of a playmaker at a premium position in a backup role, it's important. They absolutely, as Matt LaFleur said this offseason, they dodged a bullet there.
I lost my train of thought for a second. I'm a little worried about the streak of undrafted free agents making this team because they have so many guys spoken for, so many spots spoken for. Obviously, it was a very young team. They've had two massive draft classes back to back. There's a lot of bodies in camp that you kind of know they're going to make the team. As we get into family night, as we get into the preseason, are there guys that Packer fans should watch for? Like, or is this it? Like, maybe it doesn't happen this way.
Wow, that's a great question. I wish I had my roster with me. Is there someone who's undrafted? No, not from this class. You know, there are some from previous classes, like Emmanuel Wilson,
of course,
could make the
yep.
team. Joel Wilson, the tight end. Who? Malik Keith.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Bowden, as the long snapper, has been cut and returned, so yeah, at least they like him to some degree.
He's a possibility. Although Orzek has been snapping
solid, yep.
much, much better. man, that's a hard one. I'm thinking of offensive linemen, usually. They find somebody, you know, like a Caleb Jones or something like that. But they are so deep, and they keep adding so many draft picks that, I don't know. There's one guy who's really aggressive and I want to see in live action I think it's Raphael Goforth. He's a inside linebacker.
Okay.
He just throws himself. He's undersized, you know, but he's like a missile out there. So it'll be interesting to see if he can do anything. I was going to say Kalen King, but he's a draft pick.
Yep, seventh rounder, sure.
Yeah, wow.
I don't think it's going to happen, Spoon.
That streak could be broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It really could.
Because here's – I think Peter Bowden might have the best chance, and I don't think he's going to be Peter Bowden as a long snapper. I think he's going to be Matt Orzek. So yeah.
The problem they have, well, it's a good problem, is even their practice squad guys from last year are somewhat – impressive, you know, like Grant DeBose is on the practice squad, and he's made some really nice plays and has a chance to make the roster. You know, these guys, they just have too much for those guys to make the 53, but you'll see them on the practice squad.
Yeah. All right, let's go from the bottom of the roster to the top, because we have seen now a week of Jordan Love, and last time we podcast, we hadn't seen him. He had just signed his massive extension. What are your thoughts there? I mean, I think it's obvious that the offense is better with him than without him, but you know, it isn't like the offense is overwhelming the defense. We've been talking about the interceptions. So just in terms of what you've seen from him, Spoon, what's your early, prognosis there?
Well, I'll tell you what the biggest difference, with Sean Clifford and Love was Clifford, reacting to some of the pressure, had to find throwing lanes, had to move around, and even just in the pocket to be able to deliver the ball. Jordan Love can throw over pressure. So, if Kenny Clark is pushing the center back, he's still got the ability, at 6'5", with that long arm, he can throw it over the top. He has numerous arm angles that he uses too. So if Kenny Clark's in his face and he needs to throw it with, a 40 degree angle, he can do that too. We saw with the Dontavian Wicks touchdown on Wednesday, he pretty much sidearmed that ball to get it in the middle. So he reacts and handles pressure so much better. He's really good at reading the rush, I think, too, and gets rid of the ball. So the big thing, he's thrown a couple interceptions. He's probably now starting to hit his groove. It's been a full week now, and I would guess that, now we'll see maybe even a little better performance.
I'm old enough, Spoon, to remember Matt LaFleur begging Jordan Love to let it rip. He doesn't have to do that anymore. Yeah. He lets it rip now. And there was a I think it was an individual drill. So he was rolling, and the torque that he puts on a body, he made an out route to Jaden Reed, and I think it was in Indy. He made an out route ball to Jaden Reed on the right sideline, and the torque, like he lets it rip in a way that he didn't early in his career, and it looks more confident. Like he just has more confidence than he had. Where he can just really let his arm go. He knows where it's going. As far as the interceptions, look, he closed last regular season with 18 touchdowns and one pick. I'm not too worried about the interceptions in July, in August. I think it's kind of silly, and I've had some Packer fans on my feed kind of like freaking out about the interceptions. Like, this is a fan base for the longest time with Aaron Rodgers that said, boy, force it in there more, make more plays. They never throw interceptions. Chance it, make more plays. I feel like that's what Jordan Love is doing now, where he'll use practice to stretch the boundaries of what is possible, and he might throw a pick in practice because of it, but that's what you use practice for. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like the flip side of it. And no, I'm not going to – I don't see any reason to freak out about Jordan Love's picks. We've seen in the regular season his first – year as a starter, he takes good care of the football.
Yeah, he's not afraid to dump the ball over the middle, which Rodgers did not like to do because it risked an interception going off the running back's hands. He likes to throw right in the middle. If a guy, a wide receiver, sits down 5 yards out, he'll take that. He did that with A.J. Dillon, and I can't remember which drive it was on Thursday, but, he could have looked, downfield. It was 3rd and 8, and he dumps it to Dillon, and sure enough, he was wide open, and, he got the first down. So I just think he's, there's no obsessions in his game, that he has to throw two interceptions or else he's a failure, I think he just is playing the quarterback position.
Similar to the question about the undrafted guys, goes back to a conversation we had on the last podcast about they have some salary cap relief now and could theoretically add when cutdowns roll in, or even, via other means, via trade or whatever. I know it's only been a week, do you still feel like that's a possible route for them, and there's a position group out there where they could really add somebody of considerable note, given the fact that they have this freedom to do so now?
I think it's just insurance. I think if something happens to one of their top receivers, something happens to one of their pass rushers, something happens, to an offensive lineman, you have to assume they're going for a Super Bowl this year. And the way they've structured everything, they want to make it this year. And I think they've given them that leeway. If something happens, football's full of injuries, and, someone's going to get hurt. And if it's someone really critical, then they have that possibility, something open to take a rent-a-player,
I think it's much more likely and certainly preferable to save that cap for your guys, because there's a lot of talent in this roster, and it's cheap right now, but it's not going to be cheap forever. So the more you can save to re-sign your own with this roster, I think that's the design of it. Now, it'll be interesting, because right now as we sit here, I think this is a really talented roster. I think that most positions have not just talent but depth. I don't know where the glaring hole is of you need a guy here, you need to add talent. I just don't see that right now. But because I don't see it right now doesn't mean that I won't see it in a month, right? Week 3, week 4, we'll get, that's where it is. Like, that's possible. Yeah, by the trade deadline, we might see a place where they have a glaring hole. I'm not saying they don't have one. I don't see it right now. So without that, that means you have a lot of talent. You save the cap space to sign your own, because that's not going to be cheap forever.
So family night's on the horizon, joint practices in the not-too-distant future. Matt LaFleur was kind of coy about the details of family night. What was up with that, Tommy? It was just like, you got to show up and find out.
I'm just like, dude, 35th year. Don't pull that on me. You know, don't pull that card on me.
I loved it. Come on, was your reaction when
you've
he was
been
like,
to too many family nights at this point?
It's ridiculous. There's some freaking tackling in there. My God, it's football. You know, at least use the bottom roster guys to, you know, so you can learn something about them because you only got 3 preseason games. So throw them out there and let them hit.
So this is 35th for you, is that right? This is my 11th, and I can confidently tell you that I care very, very little about the details of the family night practice. I don't have it in me to care that much how this practice is going to be structured. We'll see what it is. It'll be what it is. To play coy on it, like, I can't imagine at 35, like, how little you care about the structure of this family night practice.
I just want something that makes it interesting, you know? Yeah. Or, you know, maybe they do like they did with Mason Crosby that 1 year and have them kick like 12, have those guys kick like 12.
That'd be perfect, though.
Field goals, you know? Just make the last hour all field goals. Like, do something entertaining, you know?
Yeah. Any other stray observations you guys have rattling around your brains before we shut this down?
I don't care about the structure of family night practice, but I do think, you know, when it was Mason Crosby as a kicker, like when you're at the family night practice, when they do field goals, that's the time to get a beer or go to the restroom or whatever. Like it's going to be very interesting to watch this kicking battle starting family night. Like, what's going to happen? Is it going to stay the way it is or not? Because this is a Super Bowl contending team. And this is a roster that doesn't have very many at all glaring weaknesses, but kicker's one. And when you're a Super Bowl contender and kicker's the most glaring issue that you have, that's why we've never talked this much in camp about the kicking situation, but this is a bona fide situation. And family night's going to be a really good backdrop for that. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that.
That'll do it for this episode of the Green 19 podcast. For Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back in touch with you very soon. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.